Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And welcome to the Water Cooler, everybody. It's Thursday, October 22nd, 2020. I'm David Brody. Or, by the way, put another way on that date, it's actually debate night in America. Trump, Biden, will this be Gladiator, the sequel? Or will the muting of the microphones keep things in check? Preparations are underway at Belmont University in Nashville. Biden's strategy, simple. Don't make a major gaffe. As for the Trump campaign, look for the president to tie Joe Biden's 47 years in Washington to being the quintessential D.C. corrupt insider. Now, why corruption? Well, because the plot thickens in the Hunter Biden story. Cue the Hunter Biden B-roll, which we have right there. We now have another bombshell. A business associate from Biden's world says he actually saw Joe Biden and Hunter Biden discussing deals with China and says the family was aggressively leveraging the Biden name to make millions from foreign entities. Now, look, Joe Biden keeps saying that never happened, but the evidence is building. So there are two main issues here, and they really need to be explored. Number one, possible corruption allegations, right? And also, was there a potential cover-up as well? Also today, Amy Coney Barrett, she now has something to write on that famous blank notepad of hers, confirmed by the Senate Judiciary Committee. The Democrats protested. They didn't show up to vote. So guess what? She was unanimously confirmed. Insert laugh emoji. Well, discuss her future and what it means for President Trump. But first, our newsmaker, we want to begin with Senator Mike Braun from Indiana. We spoke to him earlier today. He had a lot to say, especially about what Joe Biden needs to tell the American public about the Hunter Biden controversy. We start, though, with Amy Coney Barrett. He was her home state senator that introduced her at the nomination hearing. Senator Braun, thanks for being here. I really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure.
Well, let's start with some of the news of the day, which is Amy Coney Barrett, someone that you had the pleasure of introducing. And here she is, at least confirmed out of judiciary, and that vote expected, obviously, to be early next week. Give us your instant reaction, if you will.
Well, yeah, I was hoping there would be no melodrama, and there wasn't. I think it was mostly incumbent upon us to use all the knowledge that I think Leader McConnell has to get this from start to finish. We knew it was going to be rebuffed from the get-go, despite the merits of the candidate and the vast acumen she brings judicially. So sadly, it's kind of the way things roll around here currently. But I think whenever we get someone of her stature, and I introduced her as a legal titan that drives a minivan, and I think that means she relates to how many of us do in middle America with faith, family, community, those values. I think we're lucky to have her come forward, and I'm going to do my best to make sure that we get this through the process. Probably late Monday, we have a floor vote on it and get it across the finish line.
Senator, she's clearly going to be confirmed next week. So then the question becomes, at this point, what kind of game changer, difference maker can an appointment like this, a confirmation like this, make in the general election to the president's reelection chances?
Well, I think when you look at Trump's accomplishments with the Supreme Court nominations, getting them across the finish line, along with the great economy, kind of taking the emphasis off D.C., maybe trying to get it back to where it needs to be more prominent in state and local governments, all of that, this is kind of the crowning jewel of it, and I think that it'll be looked that way. And I see the polls kind of converging into a place similar to what we saw 4 years ago. And I think this does nothing but help. Many of us have been disappointed that we've not been able to do more policy-wise, but when you look at some of the ideas that are coming out of the House, that doesn't surprise me. We're kind of the Hatfields and McCoys there. I think that gets resolved hopefully in a way that brings more working together post-election. And I think Trump gets across the finish line due to something like this. He made promises and basically kept them.
So you really believe that that Amy Coney Barrett confirmation would get him over the finish line here?
Yes, because this is an election in the swing states. There are 8 or 9 states that are going to determine the Senate and who wins the presidency. We're not trying to please coastal elites, which even in my race 2 years ago, I thought coming from a wholesome place like Southern Indiana, building your own business, there wouldn't be that kind of vitriol when it comes to running. And of course, I got a good dose of it, made it through. Sadly, that's kind of the nature of the beast currently politically.
Senator, I want to ask you about tonight's debate. Obviously, speaking about that, Hatfields and McCoys, there's kind of a miniature version of it going on stage at Belmont University tonight. What is your sense of what you expect to see, and how can the president be successful in a debate tonight?
So I've been clear, and I probably going to try to make a phone call to connect, to wish him luck, and to give him my idea on what really does a good job this evening. And that would be focus on your accomplishments. I think if you do that, people need to be reminded of it. I'm the freshest off the street as a Main Street entrepreneur in this place. And all I can tell you, in the years since he's been there, it's never given Main Street America, small businesses, the job creators, a better leg up. And it's measurable, stay on point there. His navigation through COVID, that was such an outlier. And when you look at vaccines, therapeutics being moved at the speed they are, making those early decisions that kept the countdown. I interviewed Fauci about 3 weeks ago and said, hey, could we have been in a better place? And even he, Dr. Birx, said no. But politically, that's going to get spun because of how caustic the environment is here. Stick with your accomplishments, your record, and then talk about the craziness of what a Democratic platform would be like if the worst case scenario occurs. I think that'll shock a lot of people in middle America to get out and vote.
Senator, I don't think there's any question. He'll definitely tout many of those accomplishments. I also think, as you know, he's going to bring up Hunter Biden, and he's going to, and it really isn't become so much now about Hunter Biden. As we get more information, a kind of a drip, drip, drip scenario does make you wonder exactly what Joe Biden knew and when he knew it. He says he denies all of this, that he didn't know anything what was going on with Hunter Biden, but we're now getting information that indeed he may have known a little bit about these business dealings. What's your reaction to some of the new revelations that are out there?
I think you got to be careful with that one, but I don't think you can avoid it. I think people are going to expect something to come out of that topic. And I think what I would advise is be very do it in a deliberative way, not one where you're kind of being bombastic, because there's enough there that we should not sweep this under the rug. You can't dismiss it as a hoax or a right-wing conspiracy, because obviously it's more than that. So I think a lot of that is about the tone and the style of litigating the issue. And if he does that, I think he'll be okay and make the case why that doesn't make sense when you got somebody that looks like Joe Biden was so tightly tied to what his son did.
You know, Senator Braun, you do make a really good point here. I know the media wants to blow this off, this whole Hunter Biden, Joe Biden thing. And you say that, you were just saying there that it can't be chalked up to a conspiracy theory or anything like that. What about these calls for some sort of special prosecutor? I know that would be very tough right before the election, but are you, what about from a Senate standpoint? Is the Senate, are there folks there? I know Ron Johnson has expressed concern that, you know, something needs to be looked into here.
Senator Johnson has spent the most time on it, and he and I have become good friends here. We see alike on a lot of issues, and whether it's pre-election or post-election, it's not going to go away. There's too much there. And my feeling is that it's bringing out a lot of what we hear about, deep state, that many people dismiss. But it looks like, you know, there's been a lid put on this. It shouldn't have taken this long to get to where it is. I feel confident Senator Johnson pre-post-election is going to keep it out there in a way that he can. And I think there's too much there. I think Joe Biden is going to need to tell the American public some simple things. Is this true? Is that his son's computer? Do something other than just kind of a hide in the basement, figuratively speaking, on the subject.
Yeah, for sure. I want to ask you about the state of the Senate. Obviously, well, Indiana's just doing fine from a red perspective. But what about, you know, you got Cory Gardner, you got your friends, Joni Ernst, you got others, Tom Tillis. What's your sense? I mean, Democrats right now, at least the political prognosticators, see this as a potentially Democrat-controlled Senate come January, albeit slightly. Do you think they're wrong?
I hope they're wrong. And I look at the polling, the Trafalgar poll that was the most accurate back in 16, seems to say otherwise. But I'll make this statement in general. For us as conservatives, Republicans, we cannot be in this kind of Hail Mary situation to where we're eking out results. And since I've been here, I've been the most outspoken Republican. We've got to do better at not just saying no to something on the big issues of the high cost of health care. We shouldn't be apologists for a broken industry. Climate, I was the first Republican to start that because it's the second biggest issue here. And if we don't engage, we're going to get the Green New Deal hoisted upon us. So to me, this is more about what we do post-election. Yeah. And until we broaden our party, bring in a lot more people that I think if we made the case correctly, that we didn't sidestep issues, we wouldn't be in a situation every time we have a major election where everything's got to fall in place in our direction.
Senator Mike Braun here on the water cooler. And I can tell you this, Republicans have a heavy lift in the Senate for sure. They're defending 8 seats specifically that are either toss-ups or even leaning Democrat. And so that's going to be a heavy lift just right there. So who knows? Democrats look like they could take the Senate. We'll see in a little bit. All right. When we come back, Steve Cortez from the Trump campaign breaks down tonight's debate. We're back in a moment.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back, everybody, to the water cooler. All right, it's debate night in America. Trump, Biden, fisticuffs, we're assuming will happen. Maybe it won't be as rough and tumble as the first one because they're going to mute some of these or mute the mics for at least a portion of this. How will it all play out? We want to bring in Steve Cortez, senior advisor to the Trump campaign. Hey, Steve, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
All right, here's a wild situation. I have a feeling the words or the name Hunter Biden is going to come. Look, it's just me. I haven't checked the Vegas odds on this, but I'm thinking Hunter Biden's coming up tonight, Steve.
I think that is a very safe assumption. Although, you know, I do want to point out that the story is not about Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden only matters because he is the vehicle through which we get to Joe Biden, because there is a Biden cartel that has been selling influence all over the world and betraying our country to our most dangerous enemies, the Chinese Communist Party. But Hunter is merely a bag man for this cartel operation. The head of the cartel, the driving force, the enabler, and we now know the financial beneficiary, is Joe Biden himself. You know, thanks to this blockbuster news out of the New York Post today, we now have an on-the-record eyewitness whistleblower, a patriot named Tony Bobulinski, who has come forward and said he has personal firsthand knowledge. He was, in fact, the CEO of this shell company that they set up to get tens of millions of dollars from a shadowy Chinese energy conglomerate mogul with deep ties to the Chinese Communist Party. And Bobulinski affirms what previous Fox News unnamed sources had affirmed, which is that the, quote, big guy discussed in these emails who gets 10% of the deal is, in fact, Joe Biden. So this is way beyond a standard grift. This is Joe Biden selling out our country to the most dangerous regime in the world, the CCP. It's reprehensible. It's likely criminal. It's treasonous, and it is disqualifying for him to be commander in chief.
Steve, a pretty powerful argument, something that the president's going to have to make tonight. How does he kind of weave that into this narrative about Joe Biden, in essence, being in Washington for 47 years? And it seems like it can play into a D.C. insider, the quintessential sure. D.C. crooked insider. Is that the plan by the campaign?
Oh, I think for sure, because we also want to connect this. It's not just personal corruption. That personal corruption likely informed and motivated a lot of his public policy mistakes regarding China. So I think the president will also make that connection. For example, regarding trade, Joe Biden was one of the principal architects of our terrible trade arrangement with China, their inclusion into the WTO, their treatment as a most favored nation, trading partner of the United States. He enabled their trade manipulation and trade abuse of United States workers for decades. And so we now can, I think, reasonably guess that that wasn't just because he's wrong on policy, but also because he's personally corrupted. I would also bring it into the discussion of the virus. When President Trump very boldly made early decisions to ban travel from China, he was roundly criticized for that decisive move. It was the right move to make, not just according to him, but according to Tony Fauci. Well, Joe Biden called that, quote, xenophobic. And we can now, I think, reasonably suspect that part of the reason that Joe Biden was so willing to jump in and leap to the defense of the Chinese is, again, because he has a personal illicit motivation, because he has been compromised by the Chinese Communist Party.
Steve, what about the muting of the microphones tonight? You know, if the truth serum was injected into a lot of Trump supporters, they might say, hey, you know what? That's not actually it's not actually a bad thing. I mean, let Biden talk more. And actually, if Trump talks a little less, that doesn't necessarily shouldn't be necessarily a problem, right?
Right. I mean, look, we don't like that the commission did it unilaterally without any consultation with our campaign. I think it's just the latest of a series of dirty tricks by that fraudulent commission, which is really just a swamp cabal. So that part is unfortunate. But you're right. I don't think it's going to materially impact the president's efficacy tonight. And by the way, you know, to your point, I think there are times in the first debate when had the president backed up a little bit, he would have allowed Biden to sort of self-destruct, right, you know, and sort of allow him to verbally fall down, because he is very prone to doing that, to confusing, meaningless word salads that tend to go nowhere. So perhaps muting the president's microphone is going to force that situation tonight, which might end up working in our benefit.
Steve, the president released on Twitter, linking to his Facebook page, the 60 Minutes, the raw, if you will, the 60 Minutes interview before the 60 Minutes interview, totally unprecedented. What's the reaction from the campaign as to why he did that? What did he feel? Why did he feel it necessary?
Yes. And listen, I haven't had a chance yet. I've been so busy with these interviews, you can imagine, on debate day, that I haven't had a chance yet to watch what he released. But my understanding is the reason he released it is he believed there was going to be some very deceptive editing going on. You've been in the television business a long time. When you're talking about taped interviews, somebody can be saying something that is very smart, and you can make it sound very dumb based on the way you clip it or based on the context of the narration around it. So my understanding is that the White House comms office was aware of some really deceptive editing that was going to go on, as well as them simply telling stories that were untrue. For instance, the president stormed out of the interview, which apparently didn't happen. So the White House just said, hey, guess what? We also have receipts. We taped you taping us. And so we're going to release the entire tape. Look, I'm in favor of transparency generally. And this president has been the most transparent president in American history. I think even his critics will have to give him credit for that, that he has been constantly available to the media, to the antagonistic media, and often disrespectful media, as well as almost constant communication via social media himself. Sometimes perhaps to a fault, sometimes getting him into hot water, but he has been transparent.
Steve, just give me a quick sense of the state of the race right now. I was talking to some folks. You gotta have Florida. I mean, Arizona, hopefully, if you guys are going to win 270, you got to win Arizona. North Carolina might look good, but I would think you got to get one of those three Rust Belt states. I mean, that's got to be important, either Michigan, Pennsylvania, or Wisconsin. What's the sense inside the campaign?
Look, I really think, and I'm trying to be objective here, not a Trump sure. operative for a moment. I think all these battleground states are in play. I really do. I think they could be won by either side. I like our momentum a lot, mainly because of the economic momentum in the country and because the polls are generally tightening in our favor, even the public polls, even the ones that I don't really trust because of their composition. And when I look at Hispanics, that's what I think is really going to bring this home for us. We're polling incredibly well among Hispanics on a national basis. We're winning the Hispanic vote in Florida. So I think Hispanics put Florida and Arizona hopefully firmly in our category. I think they also put Nevada and New Mexico within reach. If I'm right about that, then that puts all the pressure on Joe Biden to run the table in the upper Midwest. That's a tall order for him. So we are just going to work like heck for the next 12 days and earn the votes of the American people.
Right. So Miami-Dade, you're looking down there to see how Biden's turnout's there or how your turnout is, especially down Palm Beach. Well, Palm Beach County is another issue, but Miami-Dade for sure.
Sure. No, and Cuban Americans are really rallying to the president, and all, Venezuelans as well, by the way. You know, Florida Hispanics are particularly keenly aware of the evils of socialism because so many of them left socialist countries for the freedom of America, and they are not comfortable at all with the Democratic Party of 2020 that has lurched so far leftward.
Well, Steve Cortez, really appreciate your time. Good luck tonight in the debate.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, Rick Klein from ABC News will be here to give us the media's take on Hunter Biden, the debate, and the 60 Minutes tape. Back in a moment. And welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. All right. Tonight, the battle in Belmont, or at Belmont. It's in Nashville, Tennessee, and it's Trump versus Biden. You've heard of those two folks. You might want to grab the Excedrin, though. You never know. They're muting some of this, at least a portion of the debate, roughly 24 minutes and 90 minutes. I'm not quite sure how that's going to work tonight. Let's bring in ABC News political director Rick Klein, who has joined us on this program before. Really appreciate him. Hey, Rick, how are you?
Great to be with you, David.
Well, look, I don't even know what to say. What is my first question, Rick? Here's my first question. What do you make of tonight's debate? And is this muting of the microphones? How much is this really going to make a difference?
I don't think it changes that much. I mean, these are two grown men that are going to have the debate that they want to have, no matter what you do in terms of the rules or the processes. The fact is now they'll each have 2 minutes to say their piece uninterrupted. I know President Trump was complaining about this as a fairness issue, but he'll get his 2 minutes as well. And I know lots of Democrats who are worried about what he's going to do with his time uninterrupted. He'll be able to bring up anything he wants. So ultimately, it's about the other exchanges, the other crosstalk, and that's going to continue. And again, whatever rules you agree to, whatever processes you have, these are two guys that are vying for the presidency, and they're going to do what they want to do with their hour and a half in prime time.
It might make for a bit of an awkward moment because on television, you know, the mic will be muted, but at the same time, you can hear what's going on in the hall, and the candidates sure can. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be different in the room for that reason, and I wonder if there's something different about the personal dynamics that may not come through the screen.
Yeah. Let me ask you a little bit about Kristen Welker. I mean, she's in a tough spot. All these debate moderators are always in a tough spot. You know, already Trump is kind of working the refs a little bit. We had Paul Fari on a little bit, strategy of his.
Yeah, I think it's clear that the president tries to get under someone's skin with an interview. And I think he's been attacking Kristen Welker, I think, pretty unfairly, actually. I have a lot of respect for her as a journalist. And it's no surprise that she has been chosen as the moderator that's been out there for weeks or for months now. It's a difficult spot. I've helped prep the anchors for debates a couple of different times, and it's not an easy thing to do when you're under the spotlight like that. So I don't envy anyone in that position. I think all you can do as a moderator is to do your job and do it as well as you can.
You wonder if the muting of the mics actually might help Trump, because if the truth serum was injected into Trump campaign advisors and quite frankly, even some Trump supporters, they might be saying, you know what, you know, 15-20% less of Trump might be a good thing tonight and let Biden speak a little bit more.
Yeah, I think they might be looking for a little bit of the discipline. One of the critiques that you saw from Trump supporters afterward was, let Biden have his say. Their feeling is that he does damage whenever he speaks. It is a weird kind of dynamic because I think some folks in the Biden camp would say the same things about President Trump. So do you have a debate where neither guy really wants to be the overwhelming force? They'd rather see the other one get more time. That's a different dynamic that speaks to how strange a time we live in.
Rick, the 60 Minutes interview that the president did, he's now released it, I say on Twitter. I guess he tweeted about it, but it links to his Facebook page. Have you ever seen anything like that? He's basically releasing the video that his team shot, pretty much. I mean, this is pretty unprecedented.
Yeah, I don't know of a precedent. And I imagine that CBS and 60 Minutes aren't happy to see their big exclusive out there live streaming. You know, I think it seems to me from what I've seen of the interview that the president wasn't particularly happy with how it went and wanted it to be out there in an unvarnished form just for his own supporters, for anyone to be able to watch. But, you know, the whole point of sitting down with 60 Minutes is the massive television audience that program gets. And Joe Biden is also part of the program on Sunday. is our understanding. So you have them back to back. So in terms of strategy, you know, getting in front of what might be a damaging interview, firing up your supporters more, it seems increasingly like it's geared for President Trump to run against the press in the close of this campaign. A lot of the similar things he did from 4 years ago, and I understand it as strategy, but there's a reason he's showing up to the debate tonight, and there's a reason that he sat down with 60 Minutes. He knows that there's a lot of audiences out there he needs to continue to reach.
There is something to be said about releasing the interview in its entirety, maybe not before the 60 Minutes interview, but maybe after the 60 Minutes interview. In other words, sometimes, as you know, Rick, I mean, you got a certain amount of time. You can't put everything in. And it's interesting sometimes to see the dynamic of a full interview compared to what a Leslie Stahl or someone else might have to put in a 17-minute piece.
Yeah, and I don't know what 60 Minutes' plan was, if they were going to put out all the video or a transcript afterward, as often is the case. But I know for a fact they didn't expect to see it play out on Facebook on a Thursday. It's a Sunday night show.
Right, that's a good point. Hey, Hunter Biden, talk to me about how the media is covering this, or to a degree maybe even not covering it. It seems like they're kind of been dragged into this. They pretty much have to cover it now. It's gone beyond the Rush Limbaugh, Mark Levin kind of conservative radio orbit. It's broken through that barrier. What's your take on all of this?
Well, I think with any story that breaks late in the presidential campaign, I mean, we have to do our jobs and to vet the material. Often people make an assumption that because we don't give something a lot of broadcast minutes that we're not looking into it or we're not highlighting it. And that's just not the case. I mean, we report out stories, and David, I'm sure you do the same all the time, that we don't put out everything that we learn about it because we want to make sure we have verifiable information. This broke in a very strange way. It happened at a strange time in the campaign as well. I think all of the sourcing on it has been odd. I'm confident that, you know, as we report details of this, it'll be things that we know and that are verifiable. I also am very confident that President Trump is going to, you know, continue to be able to talk about it as much as he wants, including at the debate tonight. I expect it to come out.
Is the media somewhat, and if not complicit in this? I mean, they've kind of given Joe Biden a bit of a free rein here. I mean, he basically says there's nothing to it, but yet we still get a drip, drip, drip on this. Just wonder if he hasn't been able to skate free for a while. It might come back and hurt him now because he's got to answer some of this here at the end of the campaign.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, I can't speak for any media organizations or even beyond my own. But I know that this is a campaign that's been very careful along the way. It's not a secret that Joe Biden has done, fewer informal press availabilities, fewer interviews, fewer campaign events. Mm-hmm. Their view is that during the time of COVID in particular, that having big public events and having those kind of engagements would look and feel different, and that maybe people expect something a little bit different. But yeah, the debate's going to happen tonight. A lot of people are going to watch it, and you're going to see both candidates making their pitch.
This could be, though, an issue where the fact that Biden hasn't really been asked too much about this, he's been kind of inoculated to a degree. It could come back to haunt him, though, potentially.
We'll see. We'll see how he answers it. I mean, he got a taste of it at the first debate, and he had an answer back that I've heard repeated to me by Democrats, which mm-hmm. is, he wants to talk about my family. I want to talk about your family at home. To the extent that he can turn it back to that, I feel like that might be part of it. But, mm-hmm. President Trump is going to bring the case that he wants to tonight.
Rick Klein, always a pleasure to see you and speak to you. Thanks again, Rick.
Hey, thanks, David. Be well.
All right. Coming up, the Idaho Christian guy, and it's not just him, a couple of them out in Idaho who were praying outside and singing hymns. And then guess what? They got arrested. His story next.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. Look, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that religious liberty is under attack in America. You can look no further than California. We're going to have a lot of stories about California religious liberty coming up on the program in the future weeks, especially after the election. It's not going away. I mean, you cannot worship. There are many places in California where you can actually not worship, go to church indoors. If you go and worship indoors, you will be fined. As a matter of fact, there are pastors out there saying, hey, look, we're going to do it anyhow, and come you know what or high water. All right, hell or high water. That's what they're saying. Anyhow, in Idaho, there's a very interesting situation. 150 people or so went into the Moscow City Hall. They actually were outside praying and singing hymns, and then the police showed up, and they got arrested. We talked to Gabriel Wrench, one of those folks that was arrested. Let's take it from the top as to what happened.
Yes. So our city council on July 2nd voted in a resolution that required everyone to wear a mask where they cannot social distance. Now, keep in mind, I'm in Moscow, Idaho, which is in Latah County. Idaho overwhelmingly is conservative, except for my county and one other county in Idaho. So I'm in a liberal county. And on July 2nd, they voted into this resolution. Well, my church, the way we protest is we go sing psalms in downtown, or we go sing psalms like we did September 23rd at City Hall. On September 21st, our city council voted to extend the resolution through January 5th. So it's just, and also keep in mind, there's no definable emergency scenario in our county. In fact, the emergency health order that our council signed in to become a resolution, they didn't define what the emergency was. You can't define it. They didn't. They also didn't define what metrics would look like to be able to get out of the health emergency order. We've had zero hospitalizations and no deaths in our county since March. Yeah. Virtually zero. We might have had about, I think, three hospitalizations. So on September 21st, the council voted to extend the health resolution to require everyone to wear a mask where they couldn't social distance. And so on Tuesday, our pastors decided, well, hey, let's go do a psalm sing at City Hall in the parking lot. And so on Wednesday, September 23rd, we gather about 4:45, right after everyone's kind of getting off work. We gather at 4:45 to sing psalms. And there's about 150 of us. The cops were present. And the cops had told my pastor that, hey, if no one's social distancing and not wearing a mask, then we will cite. We will cite and potentially arrest. And so I was standing on the edge of the crowd. And so the cops, I was just the first one that the cops could reasonably walk up to. And the cops asked my mom, who was standing next to me, hey, are you with this person? And I said, yes. My mom said, yes, this is my son. And then I put my arm around my friend next to me and said, this is my friend. Obviously signaling that I'm not social distancing, not wearing a mask.
Right.
And so then they asked for my ID. I did not hand them over my ID because I did not recognize that as a legitimate question in this scenario. I'm practicing my First Amendment rights. I'm practicing my First Amendment rights to, excuse me, I had to turn off the air conditioner. I'm practicing my First Amendment rights to exercise my freedom of religion, my freedom of speech, my right to petition, and my right to assemble, all in one. And so I said, officer, you don't have to do this. Your duty is to defend my constitutional rights, not the mayor's resolution, not to enact the mayor's resolution. So we went back and forth, and then he just said, well, I give me your ID one more time. I wouldn't give it. And then he proceeded to arrest me as we're singing Psalm 20 in the background, where it says, some trust in chariots, some trust in horses, but we trust in the Lord our God.
Good. Yeah, how appropriate that psalm was being sung at the time. All right, so then what happens? So we've got a couple minutes left in the segment. So to condense it all, what happens at that point? You go, where do they take you?
So I got arrested, and they took me to Latah County Jail, where there was deputies at the jail, not social distancing and not wearing a mask while I'm in prison, you know, while I'm in jail for 2 hours. And then they released me. And as I'm walking out, they're releasing me. And every deputy or PD police officer that came up, I was just preaching at him. I was like, you guys know this is wrong, this is not right, and everything. And one of the things I said, actually, in the jail cell, while people would come up to me and talk to me but get information from me or whatever, I said, you know, the same courage that it took, I'm no Rosa Parks, don't take me as acting like I'm right. A Rosa Parks here, but the same courage that it takes to stand up against our unconstitutional mask mandate, and the same courage that it takes to stand up against Jim Crow laws, it's the same courage. It's the same muscle at work. The thing is that it should be easier to stand up against our unconstitutional mask mandate than it was to stand up against Jim Crow laws. And this is just how far we've gone as a country, that we've lost this courage backbone.
Gabriel, what's been the reaction there in the community? I mean, I'm not sure of the leanings. I'm assuming, is it conservative, liberal? Where? In other words, what's the community's reaction been and the fallout since, positive or negative?
Yeah, you know, it's polarized our community significantly. I mean, 2 days
That's
after I was driving around, it really is. 2 days after I was driving around town, everyone knows me. I mean, I'm a host of a Christian TV show called Cross Politics, so people already kind of knew me from that, but then I got arrested, and then, you know, I go on Laura Ingraham, I go on Glenn Beck, President Trump retweets my arrest. It just goes all over the place. So I'm driving around town, and I'm constantly getting flipped off in my car. It's been really just divisive. It's been unbelievable.
And I guess for the future, we've got about a minute left. What's your biggest concern as it relates to the future of where this could be going? Because this it seems like this could only potentially be the beginning, and there's a lot of nefarious people out there that are taking advantage of a very serious health situation.
Yeah. So, and again, you got to be able to define an emergency in our area, and you can't. You can't define an emergency in our area. So, people don't understand that that there's certain liberties that are be conditioned to be taken away in all this. I mean, what country requires you to wear a piece of cloth on your face? I mean, I think of Saudi Arabia. I can think of, you know, Islamic jihadic countries. Those are the countries that require you to wear a piece of cloth on your face. And so there's certain liberties that I don't think we understand that we're losing now as we're being conditioned. I'm in Texas right now. Governor Abbott's required everyone to wear a mask. And we should absolutely make it as difficult, as hard as possible, wherever you go, that this is, you know, the science is out on this. Studies show that even cloth masks don't work for the general public. The CDC up on their, still on their website says that masks do not work for the general public. It still says that on their website. And yet, you know, Dr. Fauci, of course, in March was saying don't wear a mask. And now he's saying wear a mask. I mean, we're being conditioned in a really tragic way.
You know, Gabriel Rensch may be an evangelical Christian. It's not just happening to Christians in this country. Orthodox Jews are furious with Governor Cuomo in New York. He's restricting worship services there in certain capacities. So it's hitting all faiths, all time in America. Back in a moment with the last segment. All right, welcome to the water cooler, or back to the water cooler. I have this in my hand because I'm not going to drink. It's time for the last sip, but it looks good when I have it in my hand. All right, so the president of the United States, Donald Trump, but I don't know if you've heard that the next president of the United States is not going to be Joe Biden. It's not. It's actually going to be Kamala Harris. Now, how do I know that? I'll tell you why. Because her husband, her husband said it. Have a look. I'm married to the next president of the United States, Joe Biden. He's married to Joe Biden? I'm confused. Oh, he's married to Kamala Harris, who, let's be honest, he just let the secret out of the bag, the cat out of the bag, whatever, something's out of the bag. Joe Biden apparently is going to be Kamala Harris's vice president. I'm a little confused. Well, just to clear it up, so Kamala Harris actually cleared it up pretty well. Here she is.
A Harris administration together with Joe Biden.
You mean a Biden-Harris administration? No, that was that. Can we hear that one more time?
A Harris administration together with Joe Biden.
I'm sorry. It cracks me up. I'm going to watch that all night on like a loop, by the way. The Harris administration. So that's right. It's President Donald Trump versus Kamala Harris. Joe Biden standing in tonight, which is nice for Kamala Harris at the debate. And we'll see how that works. By the way, both will be somewhat censored tonight. And by the way, we're bringing this back all the time. Just a quick shout out to Madison, our associate producer, who made this sign. I think it costs $1.50, but it's like an iconic thing here at the water cooler. But they're both going to be censored tonight to a degree with those muting microphones. But I did the math, and I'm not that great at math, but it's 24 minutes that they'll be muted out of 90 minutes. Look, that gives Trump about 66 minutes. Yeah, 66 minutes of time where his mic is not muted, which means we're going to have plenty of verbal fisticuffs for sure. I can tell you this, that Joe Biden, one thing he has to do tonight, that's it, just not make a gaffe. He's had plenty of gaffes, but we don't need to hear anything about 200 million people dying of COVID or anything like that. He can't do any of that. But indeed, he may end up being a gaffe machine tonight. And if that's the case, then maybe, you know what they should do? They should probably just censor him at this point for the rest of the debate if he makes a gaffe. We're back in a moment.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
And welcome back to the Water Cooler. We're at the end of the show, but that doesn't mean it's the worst part of the show. We don't do it like that. We don't go like from best to worst, not at all, because you know why? Sophie Mann is here with us, justthenews.com, and you are not the worst.
What an introduction.
Well, thank
you. I hope not.
Yeah, the introduction is, welcome, here's Sophie Mann, she's not the worst.
Okay, well, hopefully I'm close to the best, but...
I'm sure. What's going on, Sophie?
Yeah, let's talk about what's going on. So, Wednesday night, last evening, the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, along with the FBI Director, Chris Wray, gave a joint press conference about things that are going on pertaining to the U.S. election in Russia and Iran.
Right.
So always fun. Effectively, what they said was that Iran and Russia, particularly in this case Iran, have managed to get their hands on U.S. voter data, voter registration, hacked our systems, hacked people's emails, basically, and are sending propaganda links and, you know, false election-seeming emails out saying... effectively, they're trying to hurt Donald Trump, but the way that they are doing that is that they are masquerading the emails as though they are from the Proud Boys group. And basically, the emails say, vote for Donald Trump or else we'll bring violence to your cities, and a series of other threats that are way outlandish and meant to scare American voters. Basically, the director, both of the directors said that most Americans won't fall for these, although there's, you know, like, we're in a divided political environment right now. I think that there probably is a real constituency who would be alarmed to get that type of headline in your inbox. But basically, they've said that this is a clumsy but sort of strong-armed way of trying to impact the American election cycle, and that it's the Iranian regime has for a long time been using its intelligence ministry as sort of this corrupt propaganda office, not unlike what we see in Russia from time to time, but this time the real pertinent threat is coming out of Iran.
Well, what's interesting, I know they mentioned the Proud Boys, and I know that, if you tie the Proud Boys in a fake Proud Boys email with Trump, that can lead to like, oh gosh, Trump's a horrible human being.
Correct. And all that.
But what they're probably really doing is they just want to cause a lot of chaos.
Yes.
I mean, right, Russia, well, Russia was back in the, well, apparently Russia is to a degree, there's still something there, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not just Iran, they're saying.
Yeah. So as we've been warned by Secretary Mnuchin and Secretary Pompeo, and now both directors, these foreign adversaries are touching upon the division that they see in the U.S. today and just trying to sow those seeds of chaos a little bit ahead of the election. Iran in particular happens to be taking a stance against the president and is pro-Joe Biden in a sense, perhaps because of the Obama administration's ties to the nuclear deal. We're not exactly sure, but either way, they're all just trying to mess things up a little bit for us.
Sophie, all the best. I got to run, you know.
Go for it.
We got to pay the bills. Peter Schweitzer on the show tomorrow. See you. Have a good evening.